Happy birthday, Chris Pratt.
Is it his birthday?
39. I thought he was younger.
He's older than me?
Yeah. Chris Pratt's 39. Welcome to the One Seat Buffer podcast.
This he's having a heck of a week.
Yes.
That viral speech that went, that he's gotten a lot of acclaim for.
He loves Jesus, which is good for him. He's 39.
For all of us?
Sure, but this is not a religious podcast.
I'm sorry.
I can't believe he's 39. His birthday is today, June 21st. He's 39. And he is about to be in another number one movie at the box office with Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
About to be. I mean, it's already going to be like number one at the box office.
Is it going to make more money than Incredibles 2 did last week?
I don't know. Incredibles 2 is going to have a lot to live up to. I don't know what the numbers are for last week, but I know here it did better than Beauty and the Beast.
For real?
For real.
How did it stack up against Beautician and the Beast, though?
Was that a show or was that a movie?
It was a movie. In the old, I've never seen it, but my only context is I just watched 40-Year-Old Virgin again for the first time in a long time.
Yep.
And there's a great... But Paul Rudd's gonna YAMO burn this place down.
Oh my gosh. Now, I was here for Beauty and the Beast, and it was bananas in the Palms 10 Theater where we're taping this One Seat Buffer podcast. Travis, Gatel, the general manager, you're saying that Incredibles 2 was busier than that.
Yeah.
I can't believe
it. Like almost 50%.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm just completely shocked. I mean, I wasn't here during Beauty and the Beast, but I'm looking at the numbers and I can't believe that Incredibles did better than Beauty and the Beast. I didn't think anything was going to beat that for a kid's movie.
Well, and we were talking about it last night. You and I were just chatting. Mm-hmm. Is that we were what? In college when The Incredibles came out?
14 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was kind of like that.
Right.
But there's a whole generation of, like, young adults that maybe even have children. That was their, like, big seminal animated movie. Like, mm-hmm. What Toy Story was for me, there's this group of young adults is now, this was their Toy Story. And so that's why I think this movie is going to have such a carry, because it's not just about family men like myself and Tony who have three young children who were excited about it, but we were just as excited about it too because I remember it. But it's just one of those things where it's like you have these influences. There's people that are just solo wanting to go see it because it's the sequel to their favorite movie from their childhood.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's the same thing as you talk about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, because Jurassic Park came out in 93. Then there was Jurassic World. Then there was that really bad one that should just be, you know, like
Jurassic Park 3.
They should just strike it from the record.
Yeah.
And then they kind of did. And then all of a sudden in 2015, here came Jurassic World, and it made $1 billion, and it was crazy popular. So Chris Pratt, if we come back to the Prattster celebrating a birthday, he signed on to do 3 Jurassic Park movies or Jurassic World movies. So this is the second one, Fallen Kingdom. It is PG-13, and I will say that it follows suit like any good Jurassic Park movie. It almost toes the line of being rated R. Because there's some moments where people don't make it, and there are going to be spoilers in this review. And then there's some intense moments. There's some good scares. But there's not a lot of foul language. Which is nice.
There's no foul language. And so, you know, I asked that question today when people said, well, tell me, would you come back to work tomorrow? So people I work with, they've got teenagers. They can handle the violence and maybe the terror aspect of a mm-hmm. dinosaur. It's the foul language and things like that and gratuitous love scenes that bothers them as a particular family unit. This movie is totally fine for that. There wasn't a lot of foul language. There was maybe, what, 2 kisses in the entire movie between Dallas Bryce Howard and Chris Pratt. So it lives to you. We talked about Incredibles being child's favorite movie. Mm-hmm. For me, when I was 11 years old, 1993, Jurassic Park came out. The reason I have a movie podcast today is because I saw Jurassic Park in 1993. It was the movie that made me, Joel Krausar, fall in love with movies as a whole. When he takes his glasses off and sees that Brontosaurus for the first time and you have that amazing John Williams score come in, I was hooked. And whenever I hear that score, which it's funny, the first time I was ever on the radio with you, Tony, was when I was subbing for that sports show, and somehow that episode we started talking about Jurassic Park. So Jurassic Park has like been interweaved in our entire microphone relationship well. So we've got this movie that it came out again in 1993, changed the world of CGI. It changed the world of how you can tell some of these science fiction stories in a mainstream way that are really accessible. And Michael Crichton was the biggest author in the world at the time.
Right.
Like, and Congo had failed miserably, mm-hmm. but then Jurassic Park comes out, and it's like, oh, my. And the science is just realistic enough that you're sitting there thinking, maybe this could happen with a petrified mosquito.
I think if it were ever going to happen, we're getting closer to it for sure. I mean, if they're making robots that can walk, talk, run, jump, work, you know what I mean, drive a car. We have self-driving vehicles. The thought of bringing dinosaurs back. I don't think we need to bring them back.
No, I think that this movie teaches us some of those lessons.
I don't think, but we don't learn any lessons. That's sort of a theme in the real world, isn't it? We just keep repeating ourselves. And that's what you could say about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Is it a victim of rehashing old ideas? And my opinion is yes. So if you saw Jurassic World, which was the name of the sequel to Jurassic Park, right? Am I correct? Correct? Yeah. Is that right? Okay. Is that right?
Yeah, it's basically, I feel like they've created a separate franchise within the franchise.
Yes.
This is the, you know, Chili's to go. You know, this that you see in an airport to the Jurassic Park franchise.
Oh, my God. Jurassic Park Lost World. That's what it was, right?
Yes,
second
the Lost
one?
World.
Okay. I didn't even look that up. I just remembered it. So here's how it follows that formula. And I don't want to knock it because I don't want to knock it too much, but I have some issues with the movie, but it's a fun summer blockbuster. Let me just start there. I love how this movie opened up. And when they, in the marketing, talked about seeing it on the biggest screen that you can, I feel like watching it here at the Palms on the XL, and it's so great that we're taping this when we are because we can hear walls vibrating from dinosaurs doing their thing. So it's 3 years after the events of Jurassic World. The Isle Nublar, however you say it, the island.
Isla Nublar.
Isla Nublar has been abandoned. Mercenary team is there. They're driving a sub, and they're trying to retrieve some DNA from the Adonimus Rex. I thought, guys, that looked so great on the XL screen.
Which it made me immediately think of the early 90s, late 80s movie, The Abyss.
Yeah, we were immersed in that.
Yeah, so it's right there. And like I immediately thought of that movie, which was a great... I firmly believe that they were hearkening back to that because those are some of the pioneer CGI movies, special effects movies. Yeah. And I think that Spielberg, who even though he didn't direct this movie, he was very involved as a producer, wanted to make sure that they were paying homage to what got them to where they are today. And that's what I thought of immediately when I saw that submarine going. And then you have the Jaws 3 door, moving door with
that's
coming into
cool
the water
moment.
Too.
They've been able to incorporate the doors in all of, like, you know what I mean? Like, whether it's a gate or a door, there's always that element, Travis. And that, I'm telling you, if you don't see it on the XL, you're missing out. Like, as many issues as I have with this movie, I would not want to have watched it on any other screen.
Totally agree with that. I mean, it was just absolutely awe-inspiring on that screen.
And I think amazing. The issues that you can have with the movie are fair, but it's still a very well-made movie. Mm-hmm. Like, at no point did I feel it was so campy that I was like, oh, really? I wasn't taken out of any moments because of CGI or a special effect, but it is fair that they are basically retelling the story from the very first movie, 1993, in just a new way.
It definitely, so these guys are in a sub, they get this bone from that Indominus Rex, they get it to land.
Which, that was a hybrid of what? The raptor and the T-Rex?
I can't even remember.
They used a bunch of different.
But they used, instead of frog DNA, they used chameleon DNA to bridge the gap so it had the ability to camouflage itself.
That thing was, but then that Mosasaurus, that giant, is that what it is? The Mosasaurus?
The Mosasaurus, yeah.
Yeah, the Mosasaurus, yeah, that big giant. So the guys in the sub don't make it out. Spoiler alert. Right
well, you know that.
Up.
Like it's, yeah. It, and again, you have that whole, they get swallowed up is a perfect way to put it. It's just they use shadows so well in that opening sequence. Like I think of the first time I've ever been scared watching a movie, and it was the opening scene of Jaws where you don't even see the shark. You just see that girl getting pulled side to side in that. And that's, you have those moments where it's like, they're making glib comments like, anything that's in here is dead already.
Right.
And it's like, you know that they're not. Like, we wouldn't be sitting in this theater if they
were. There's something there. So they're sent to the Isle to retrieve dinosaurs because the plan initially is that Benjamin Lockwood, who is John Hammond's former partner in creating dinosaur cloning technology, is he has this new plot of land and they're going to take all the dinosaurs there. This is a very pro save the dinosaurs, and that's where we see Claire, played by Bryce Dallas Howard. She's working for a dinosaur advocacy group, which I thought was great, and her goal is to try and find a way to save the dinosaurs because the Isle, how do you say it again?
Isla Nublar.
Has a volcano, and the volcano's going crazy. So I'm going to just give you a little bit of fast forwarding. So Claire gets hooked up at the Lockwood estate. She meets up with this guy named Eli, who's kind of handling the affairs for Benjamin Lockwood, played by the great James Cromwell. And Eli convinces Claire to go find Chris Pratt, whose character is Owen, and convince him to go back to the island and save the dinosaurs. So they arrive with this team, and then they're hoodwinked. And the whole point of this mission was really to, yes, grab some dinosaurs, but also they wanted the blue raptor, which is named Blue.
Right.
I thought it was interesting. They totally destroyed the island like that. And that's been in all of these movies. So now we know for sure. And when that happened, I thought, okay, so they're shutting the door on that part, and wherever this movie goes the rest of the way, and Travis, that's what I think is going to surprise people, where this movie goes, because that island is gone, right?
There's nothing left on it, although there is a second island, so.
Oh, great.
Is that what the third one was on, the second island, right? The one that the third Jurassic Park that we all love to
is
hate?
Right?
The third one was on the second island.
Yeah, or maybe it was the second one. I don't remember. The second one, The Lost World, was the second island, I think.
I don't remember.
Basically, what I'm going with this, though, is that moment of the volcano eruption, mm-hmm. it lends itself to tremendous action sequence there. You have a little bit of... See, Spielberg's fingerprints are on this whole thing. You've got some raiders, some boulders rolling down hills. Yeah. You've got Jumanji-esque just dinosaurs coming out of nowhere. But I think the thing, though, is as they are egressing from the island on this big barge, with this military-like presence, of course, to... Can we just talk about one trank dart taking down a dinosaur?
Yeah, those are some good tranquilizers, aren't they?
I mean, that's pretty intense. I mean, I've seen Operation Bow Drop. I know it takes a lot more than that to take down a large animal.
So they're going.
But you had that brontosaurus, that moment. Like, mm-hmm. I almost, that part was really sad when the volcano. Because just like the first movie, you see that brontosaurus, it's this moment of wonder, and then you have this brontosaurus that's literally being pulled into the lava at the end.
And you know it's gone.
Yeah.
So what's interesting, though, before they get to the destruction of the island, I forgot to mention that Dr. Malcolm returns. Jeff Goldblum, Summer of Goldblum. He's had a couple of good years recently, and I'm excited about that. So Ian Malcolm is back, and he's talking in front of Congress, and he says, let the dinosaurs die on that island because it's sort of the plan, right? And he said that John Hammond made a mistake in cloning dinosaurs. So that was sort of an interesting take. But when you think about all the stuff that Dr. Ian Malcolm has gone through, going back to 93, it's really no surprise. But I'm glad that they brought Goldblum into the film. I don't have any issues with that because I like Jeff Goldblum.
I just don't know why that part gets, and it did what it was supposed to do. Like, I was angry at Congress because it's like, this was someone who went through this. Like, this isn't like just some scientist who's testifying. Like, yes, he's a scientist. Yes, he's a mathematician, but he witnessed a T-Rex eat a guy off of a toilet. Like, he's not, he has seen it. He's been bitten by a dinosaur. He survived it. Why aren't we listening to this dude? And he makes some good points. Like, I know that this isn't a religious podcast, but there are some themes that are intertwined leaned into mm-hmm. theology with this movie. You know, free will, obviously men have, the mankind, not men, but mankind has the ability to use our brains to its fullest capacity. Mm-hmm. The question because is, should we do it? Right. And that's the common theme. That's the big fundamental objection in this movie. And what Goldblum says is, we went against nature and we cloned these dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. This is nature's way of taking it back and correcting that mistake. But then as people were like, nope, screw it. Let's just keep pulling.
We need more dinosaurs.
Let's rescue these things.
Yeah. So there's a couple different moments in this movie where you're like, oh snap! You might not have seen that coming. And the first one is on the island, and Chris Pratt gets shot with a tranquilizer dart. And not only does he get shot, they take his friend Blue, the last surviving Velociraptor, and they leave Owen. They left Pratt behind. I was like, wow, they just left the dude, and there's lava creeping towards him. Spoiler alert, he manages to get off of there, but that surprised me right away.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, like, okay, I'm wondering, I'm understanding that eventually these dinosaurs are going to make their way back to the States, but then what's going to happen? So this Lockwood estate comes into play. James Cromwell, ailing Lockwood, very rich, has this cool house with, like, it looks like you're in a museum with, like, dinosaurs just chilling, has this granddaughter, Maisie, who's a young kid that'll probably, you know, come into more of a role in the next movie.
Yep.
So Lockwood is under the impression that the dinosaurs are coming back to go onto his new island, but little does he know, underneath his own building is this massive R&D lab / dinosaur holding cell, for lack of a better word.
Compound.
And it's, we like see our buddy, was it Henry Wong? Is that his name?
That Henry character? Wu?
I can't remember his name, but he was in the first Jurassic Park. And he's back, and guess what? They've created another dinosaur. Were you surprised, Travis, that they created another new dinosaur for this movie? Because I kind of thought, are they going to do that again? And then they totally did.
I mean, they almost have to. They created one for the last one. You can't you can't just keep at the same level if you don't create another new one. Yeah. Like they have to have another. Like they have to have the big bad one, and the big bad one always has to get bigger. It was a T-Rex in the first two.
Yeah.
It was a Spinosaurus in the third one.
That's right.
And then it was the Adonis Rex.
Well, I think in
the Spinosaurus, I forgot about that.
The thing is
I watched the third one so many times. I was like at the perfect age with the third
one.
Sure.
You have to do that to move the story, because there's really no, I mean, the first one tells that story so well, mm-hmm. that it's like, if you're going to do a sequel, you really have to figure out a way to up the ante. And apparently the ante is, and this is the part that, as much as I've enjoyed Jurassic World and Fallen Kingdom, like I would, if my family is like, I want to go see this movie, I'll go see it again. But the thing that has bothered me is the whole weaponization of dinosaurs.
Right.
Like, do we really think that we can genetically modify a killing machine that can climb mansions as well as open doors and undo beds? It's that has that much dexterity, but it will just follow our orders and just. I mean, that's the thing that's just absolutely ridiculous and almost loses me on the plot.
But I mean, when you look at it, that's exactly what they were trying to do with the raptors in the last one. I mean, the one guy wanted to weaponize them. Pratt was literally training them to be weaponized.
Right, I get it. And that was I had the same criticism of Jurassic World. Like, it's like, really? We're just going to be sending these guys into Kabul, into a terrorist cell, and they're going to clear the building and then just come back to us and just load back. These aren't St. Bernards. These aren't German Shepherds. You can't control
them. They're monsters.
But what really is the difference between a dinosaur and a dog or a cat or any other animal? I mean, if you get the right genes in them and you can make them sympathetic to a certain number of people, what's really the difference between any domestic animal and any wild animal?
That is true, I guess. They make that point. They actually reference the wolf. Right. And the wolf. Yeah, I mean, they do a good job.
I need to correct my bad on B.D. Wong, who plays Henry Wu.
Right.
Because that dude's been in all these movies for the most part.
And
maybe
ER.
Not all.
Wasn't he on ER?
I think too? He was. So they're trying to put together this Indoraptor, which is this weaponized raptor that can, like, just follow a laser scope sight and then react to it. And they need Blue, the last Velociraptor, to sort of... to use Blue's DNA to make more, of course, but then also to be like the dominant raptor so that this one will sort of fall in line. So that's where it gets kind of interesting, because we don't know until later in the film that they have already made one of these Indoraptors, right?
Yeah, they need Blue to be the alpha to, like, teach it how to operate as
they
a pack
still
animal.
Need to perfect it. The Indoraptor that we see is not perfect, and then Blue is supposed to come in, but lo and behold, Blue is recovering from a gunshot wound and in transportation to the giant creepy rich
mansion.
Had to
have a blood transfusion.
Right, a blood transfusion from a
T-Rex. There are some really good moments of levity in this movie. There are some funny scenes. That's one of the things, and I said this like after we saw it, is Chris Pratt the next giant movie star? Because he's that guy who could go do a movie, a serious movie. He's got some serious acting chops. I wouldn't be surprised if 2 or 3 years from now he's doing a movie like Philadelphia, like Tom Hanks did in his early 40s, and then he'll go right back to a big blockbuster like you see Tom Cruise in the Mission Impossible franchise. Right. You know, Chris Pratt has that ability because he's what, 6'3"? I mean, he's got a big frame on him. He can win. My wife certainly doesn't mind whenever he's on the TV.
Right.
But he's this big movie star, but he can be hilarious. So there's a lot of guys who can be great but not funny, and there's a lot of people who can be funny and not great, and I think he's one of those people who can do both.
He's certainly busy. I mean, with this and Avengers and Guardians and Lego movie sequel, so there's no slowing down, and you know, you can't help but cheer for a Chris Pratt, and obviously Universal and the folks producing Jurassic World and Fallen Kingdom, and then this third one that'll be probably coming out in 2 or 3 years, understand that.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why you keep a character like that around. Spoiler alert, he makes it to the end, and so does Bryce Dallas Howard. There are consequences in this movie, but I was surprised because we get introduced to a dinosaur vet, and then also a very funny IT guy who's played by Justice Smith. I want to give him a shout out because he's kind of the sleeper in this.
Yeah.
His character is Franklin. He did a really good job. Some great moments. But both of those characters made it to the end. I was surprised. I thought for sure
one of them would
kick
it.
Like, you figure Pratt safe, Bryce Dallas Howard safe, the little kid, of course, they're not going to kill a little kid.
Yeah, you don't keep a PG-13 rating by having a 9-year-old.
But you have like the dino vet, the dino vet, and then the IT guy. You know,
paleo veterinarian.
Thank you.
Is that even a career? Like, about Jurassic Park too. Like, also, like, this whole franchise basically reinvigorated the paleontology department at every major university in the world. Now, all of a sudden, kids wanted to be paleontologists because this movie made them feel like it was possible. You know, and I think that's the thing that's so important about this IP, is that it is far spanning, far reaching into the world of academics, even, that these people it has grown. And that's why these sequels have worked, because I'm 36, wanting to be 11 again, and my parents are like, oh, I remember taking our kids to this movie. Like, there's not a single generation that doesn't remember something about this IP, which is why it makes sense to make 3 more of these movies.
Yeah, I mean, they made $1 billion, and it was a surprise to everybody when it happened in 2015, but a success like that, not only did it do well, you know, financially, it was received well. This one, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, currently is 54% on Rotten Tomatoes. And what you're going to get in a lot of these reviews are things like, they attempt to, you know, humanize the dinosaurs and then fall short. And it is interesting because in this film, the villain or the antagonist is man, specifically Eli,
right,
who kind of does the double switcheroo on him, and that's what I think is, you can appreciate that about it. They're not trying to say, like, you listen, you take these wild animals out of their island, and guess what happens? If they get a chance to get loose, they're going to not be super happy with you, and they're going to want to take off.
And they're not – and to me, these animals aren't – it's hard to say that the T-Rex is a bad guy. The T-Rex is just a T-Rex, mm-hmm. and you're just getting in the thing's way. It's an apex predator. That's the thing. A lion isn't a monster.
Right.
A lion just can eat you. Right. Like, it's one of these things where it's like, I don't feel bad mm-hmm. for these dinosaurs. Now, the ones that are genetically modified, that's a different story. Like, that's – we collective deserve to be eaten by a hybrid dinosaur that doesn't exist naturally, that we've manipulated, we've played God and created. You know, that's where people deserve their comeuppance, if you will.
Can't be doing
technically
that.
They're all genetically modified, and we played God to create all of them. So, I mean, when you get into it.
But they didn't – you didn't create the puggle of dinosaurs, you know.
Yeah.
And that Indoraptor, so we meet the Indoraptor. So what happens, I guess, if we keep going? So they take the dinosaurs from the Isle. They show up in probably California to the Lockwood Estate. They're in this basement R&D department. They're doing the genetic modifications. Then there's these big holding cells, for lack of a better word, and that's where Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard find themselves, along with all the dinosaurs that made it there. And then there's this great sequence where they're auctioning off dinosaurs, and I say great because I did appreciate that part. Like, it was sort of like, wow, there's a, and you know, they have like stereotypical.
You
like,
got the Russian, you got the Texas oil baron, you got the Middle Eastern sheik or whatever.
And people are bidding
millions of dollars.
But when you look
dinosaurs.
At that board, if you watch this movie, go look at the board. They only took in about $140 million. Yeah. That compound that they built cost way more than $140 million.
Yeah,
they didn't cover their nut on this from a business perspective. That was one thing that kind of was like, maybe go with the B, maybe figure out a billion, how to get $1 billion to cover that.
So there's just these like rich people bidding on dinosaurs, and you're thinking, okay, well, what's going to happen? So as I'm watching that part of the movie, in my head, I'm thinking, all right, so the dinosaurs have arrived, something's going to go down, and then how are we going to get them back to this new island that Mr. Lockwood had set up? That's what I was thinking the whole time. But then I'm realizing, well, this is probably a movie that's not as long as I think. It's 129 minutes. And then I started to realize they're going to just sort of walk us. They're going to lead the horse to water here and prepare us for the third Jurassic World. And that's exactly what happens. So, again, this by this point, you know that we're talking about spoilers. So the auction is going, and Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard are locked up. He decides to release what was that dinosaur called? That thing was so awesome.
Just a battering ram.
Yeah, it was a stigma. I don't even know how to say it.
Scott, the paleontologist from Dinosaur Train, would be really disappointed
with
you.
It's like steliomoch. I can't even say it. Its meaning is Styx devil in Latin, everybody.
Of course.
But that thing was great because it just popped through the wall, and then he was able to use it to open their jail cell.
And it was a funny dinosaur. Like you laughed at him because he was kind of like... He's kind of like that wedge buster on your high school football team who has no problem running through a wall, but you know that he's kind of probably concussed and he's not the smartest kid to begin with.
You're cheering for that little guy. He's got like a hard – this dinosaur had like a hard head.
He was a comic relief, like the one like that fat, like – blew out its like feathers or whatever and like spit the oil.
Yeah, but
and,
that like, thing killed Wayne Knight in the first one. That thing was nasty.
Awesome. Yeah, it was nasty, but it was still a comic. It was still a comic like, dinosaur.
Well, when they take out a bad guy, you don't feel bad, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's when you cheer for the dinosaur.
That's
so
true.
And then you're just sort of waiting to see what's going to happen. So while this is all going on, Eli, who is the main bad guy, he manages to kill James Cromwell, who was playing Mr. Lockwood. And it was kind of like a tough scene. And then keep in mind, Maisie, the granddaughter, is running around and sort of discovering what's going on. And then she...
Can we not spoil the Maisie thing? I think that's one that I would...
Really?
Yeah, I'd want to have that one be a secret.
I think that that's a good a good call.
That's my vote. Like, if there's one thing that I was not expecting coming into this movie, that was the one curveball to me.
Yeah, I think that that I don't know. I feel like I want to reveal why, because I think that's, well, if you see it, you'll understand where it could potentially come back in a third film. Although I don't think it's going to be
without spoiling that one. Without spoiling that one, I mean, I think that that whole character, the whole storyline that she has and she plays, is a part that could make or break the movie for a lot of people.
Sure. It's a surprise.
It's a surprise. It's a curveball. So
it's the best use of a dumbwaiter since Webster, too.
Yes. Well, you're definitely thinking about right. That is a good dumbwaiter. That thing is sweet. You're thinking about like, okay, so they're sort of like Cromwell's character, Mr. Lockwood, when he's still with us. He's sort of like, you know, being coy about Maisie's mom because she's inquisitive about mom. And there's this one sequence when he's in bed and. And she says, like, was my mom there? And he said, yeah, she was there. And they show you, like, a sort of model of the original Jurassic Park. So then I think, was her mom a character in the first Jurassic Park? Because that's...
Yeah, I was immediately thinking that, too.
So, and, you know, they kind of... It comes up a couple more times. And then, of course, the big ta-da at the end is a pleasant surprise for sure. So that's what I'm thinking. Like, this movie... surprised me. I didn't love it, and I probably won't see it again. That's where I'm at with it. I'm glad that I saw it because I love summer blockbusters, and I had a good time. But I don't think it's compelling enough for me to replay it at my house.
Yeah, like
I can enjoy.
If we use our rating system of the one seat buffer, which is would you break it for this? This is a friends and family break. Like I would go sit in the packed theater with somebody that I've known for a long time. I don't want to sit shoulder to shoulder with a total stranger, which I sat shoulder to shoulder with a total stranger for The Incredibles and had no problem with that. Like these are the two movies I've seen within the last 8 days. Incredibles, hands down, the better of the two movies, which for me is hard to say because, again, Jurassic Park is my second favorite movie of all time.
Incredibles was definitely hands down like everything you expected it to be and more. As far as Jurassic World goes, I would probably not break the one seat buffer. Well, maybe with friends or family or something like that. Sure. I would, but I would definitely. This is definitely one I'll probably see again.
It's gonna make
theaters.
I would. This is one that I would pay to see a second time. I'll be honest.
That's good. Well, I'm not gonna. I'm not going to say you're wrong because, again, I can't sit here and say that I enjoy summer blockbusters. I can't sit here and be the guy that says I enjoy a summer blockbuster. But listen, like, if you want to have fun at the movies, this is the movie for that.
Yeah.
This is exactly. Mission Impossible coming up is that movie. There's like six other examples still this summer that are those kind of films that you just, it's a popcorn movie. Mm-hmm. That's something we can all agree on. This is 100%, even though I did not partake, this is 100% a popcorn movie. You're going to laugh. You're going to have a good jump scare or two. And that's the thing. Like, I am a fan of Jurassic Park and what they have created. Minus the third one because that was just bad.
But
there's so many good things. Like I said at the start, if you like a Jurassic Park 4, dinosaurs taking out dumb humans, they've got that for you. If you like a good dino on dino fight, boom shakalaka. Some good CGI with maybe some practical effects. I can't rule them out. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's all CGI. And then the storytelling is always kind of shoddy, but that's not what you're here for. This is not an Academy Award-winning movie, you know? This is sit back, it's 95 degrees outside, and you're going to watch these characters come back to life, and they're going to introduce you to some new ones.
Yeah, even if they're completely fictitious and have never existed. But the first movie did such a good job of rooting it in truth. I had never heard of a Velociraptor until the first movie, and then there's an NBA team named after him now. So it's like
pretty impressive. No doubt that this has helped people get into that the field, you know, and study dinosaurs. And like Joel said, I think that's fantastic. I love having gone to different museums and seen like Sue on display at the Field Museum in Chicago. I think that was a museum. What was that? So yeah, I mean, I just won't see it again, and that's just my personal preference. But I would never tell anybody to not come and see it either.
So
you know,
and I think that's a good segue into what's coming up, because this summer is still going to be a huge summer.
Well, we still got to wrap up this damn movie. We can't spoil the Maisie thing. Spoiler alert, Maisie is a giraffe. No, Maisie's a girl. But here's what happens. All right.
So hate the name Maisie, too, by the way.
Yeah, and they spell it kind of...
they don't spell it for you when you're watching the movie.
I bet you there's some serious symbolism in that name.
Sure. We'll learn it in the third one.
When we get into the third movie, I bet you there's going to be some serious symbolism
in that
name.
There's going to be like an iRobot type something in that one.
So here's what happens. The auction of the dinosaurs is going on. The Indoraptor gets out and starts going after Maisie and Owen, Chris Pratt, and Claire, Bryce Dallas Howard. And then, boom, here comes Blue, the Velociraptor that was trained and raised by Chris Pratt to the rescue. There's this fight between Blue and the Indoraptor, and it ends with the Indoraptor falling and landing on a Brontosaurus's...
Triceratops.
Triceratops, thank you. Yeah. Landing on a Triceratops...
Skull,
which is pretty awesome.
Impaled. There's nothing better than an impaled dinosaur.
And then, guess what? Dinosaurs just roaming, chilling in Northern or Southern California, wherever they are.
I think they're in NoCal. I think it's a clear...
They said North Cal, but I think that they showed some South California.
Which maybe
scene.
By the time the
and
third movie comes out...
Guess what? There was a post-credit scene.
Was it really?
Uh-huh. And I didn't know that until I read it as we started this, and I'm a little fired
And we're always
up.
Ones who hype, who harp on sticking around for the credits.
I didn't think there would be. I mean, I if you would have asked me, do you think there's going to be a post-credit scene, I would have said no. But guess what? There was. So the dinosaurs they're loose. And that's where, again, in my head, I'm thinking, wow, that was my takeaway from that movie was, wow. Because I thought for sure the story would go like, we're going to bring the dinosaurs to the States, kind of like in The Lost World. We're going to capture them back and then take them somewhere else. And then the next adventure will have to do with that new location. Well, what they did here is they adjusted that a little bit so that the third installment will be, it'll have to be, Travis, there's all these dinosaurs in America, in California, mm-hmm. and what are they going to do about it? Are they going to be okay with it?
It's like Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. So what is this third Jurassic World movie going to look like? I have no idea. I don't know, because they want you to be empathetic for these dinosaurs. They would have some folks believing at the end of this, like, good, like, let them go. But you know that somehow they're going to have to try and capture.
There's a lot of... But go ahead.
So the one thing that, like, worries me, though, is, like, granted, like, we don't know what the, what the lifespan of these animals are.
Sure.
But... they didn't appear to have a lot of, like, mating couples. First off, they're all females. And I know they always say life will find a way.
Right.
Life will find a way. But they don't have a lot of, like, they didn't seem to have, a lot of compatible, like,
call.
Mating.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a Noah, definite Noah's Ark, like, theme, though, to this, where they only took one of each species, didn't they?
Yeah, there was a couple of them that they had multiple of, but, I mean, there wasn't... a ton, like, I mean, there's only the one surviving Velociraptor from, like, this
Blue
island.
Is so it.
Blue is
Blue's
it.
The only
they only appeared to
He's
have.
He's the islander of raptors.
They only had one, like, Altosaurus or whatever. They only had one T-Rex.
And a couple pterodactyls.
Can we agree that why did they just kill off all of the flying dinosaurs? That is the only thing that scares me with these damn movies, is these flying pterodactyls are horrible. They just swoop down and can pick a human being off the ground
and the fact
and
that
drop
they,
them.
The fact that they haven't already caused a nuisance is just shocking, because those things can fly for
They could have left the island.
They would have left
quickly.
The island already, and they would be all over the place, and they can fly for days. They can fly hundreds of thousands
of miles.
Well,
let's talk about the Megalodon, too, or whatever the heck that giant underwater...
That thing is awesome.
Which we see it in the trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just... just waiting in the waves with the surfers.
That was such a great shot. That was surfers, that was... giant Mosasaurus, or whatever the heck it's called. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The director of this, that Bayor, hold on, I don't want to mess
JD.
His name up. Yeah, because he did a good job, and he's got some interesting. So J.A. Bayonne, director of this film, he was able, you know, some people would tell you that, like, well, this is just a payday for him. This is a guy who's done movies like The Impossible, Monster Calls, and The Orphanage. So he has a creative eye. And just like with Jurassic World 3 years ago, directed by Colin Trevorrow, who's a writer on this one, like, it's not the same as the Marvel Universe, but Universal certainly doesn't have any problems taking, well, maybe placing directors in these roles that might otherwise surprise you. I mean, you could just as well went with a guy that's done big blockbuster movies before, but that had
yeah, they could J.J. Abrams could have made this movie.
Sure, yeah,
badly.
Well, there's a stable. I don't know what a J.J. Abrams. It would be interesting to say the least. I think. I mean. Wow, now I wonder what that would be like. Would he get dinosaurs to outer space somehow?
Who would you have picked to if you're greenlit at Universal to pick a director?
That's a tough call. I feel like there's I certainly have my favorite directors and none of them really plug into that world, but then again, neither does a guy like J.A. Bayonne. So, I don't have a suggestion. I mean, of course, the first name that came to my mind is Wes Anderson, which makes no sense, and Wes would never do it. But that's one of my favorite directors.
Does Owen Wilson play Dr. Ian Malcolm's twin brother son?
Wow, a dinosaur. Wow.
I just can't see the Royal Tenenbaums and Jurassic World melding together. But I like the answer. It's good for a podcast, that's for certain.
Well, listen, I have my favorite directors.
Could Paul Thomas Anderson have done Jurassic World?
I'm definitely seeing like Michael Bay as like Jurassic World 3. Jurassic World 3.
He's going to buy the franchise. There will be a Michael Bay Jurassic Park movie.
Just explosions everywhere.
Jerry Bruckheimer presents. More I'm just so
Velociraptor
curious.
Down.
Like honestly, I know that they probably already have like a story and maybe even a script, but that's the stuff that I like. So this movie is just brand new. Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom, PG-13, 129 minutes, 54% on Rotten Tomatoes. Seed of the Palms, Tenon Muscatine. They already have a plan for what's next. They know that they'll probably start shooting it in a year and a half. And that to me, even though I wasn't a big fan of this, I can appreciate the process because. The way that this movie ends, like how I feel still, I don't know exactly what's going to happen. You know, where are we going to be at the end of that Jurassic World movie? Because I don't think there's a Chris Pratt or Bryce Dallas Howard after the next one. I'm not saying they kill him off, you know?
I think you have to just let this thing die, pun intended.
We say that, but then they're filming another Terminator movie right now. They're filming a Terminator that they're acting like is a direct sequel to T2. With Linda Hamilton, she's back. So what's gonna happen? I don't know.
My prediction on it.
Cameron directing it?
Cameron will have the property back, but he's not directing it.
I see them taking out all the dinosaurs. It's gonna like the end of this next one. All the dinosaurs are gonna be done. They're gonna put the series away for 15 years, and then in 15 years we're gonna get another like mad scientist that's gonna bring the dinosaurs
back.
Totally
right. That's accurate.
But we have to say it. One thing with Jurassic Park, whatever failures it has, it could be one of the greatest examples of marketing and the actual movie dovetailing together, because the merchandise that's in these movies is directly sold. Like, it's not referenced in the movie. Yeah. Like, you can go to a Universal Studios and buy everything that you could buy in the gift shop that was at the Jurassic World, like, today. And so, which as a marketing professional, I find that super, super interesting and intriguing how this movie kind of set the stage for all the Marvel movies, all the things that have sold action figure-wise. That you don't have that without some of the things that Jurassic Park and Jurassic World have
done. Travis is right. The last thing that I want to say about these film series, just because I'm cheating and looking, Jurassic Park 3 was 2001, and then it was 14 years, and we had Jurassic World.
Yeah.
So
can we talk about something I'm really excited about after we put Jurassic Park to bed?
Yes, I have written down three additional movies that are coming out in the next less than a month that are going to be equally as entertaining.
Yeah. Is one of them Uncle Drew?
No,
I'm super interested in how Uncle Drew is gonna pan out, because one, Shaq is hilarious and he's in this movie. Two, Nick Kroll is hilarious and he's in this movie.
Yeah.
And three, I've heard nothing but amazing things of Kyrie Irving in this thing, dressed up as Uncle Drew, these old time. If you haven't seen what these are, they started making these Uncle Drew videos where these NBA players would dress up. They get completely all prosthetized into these old timer outfits, and then they would go play pickup ball against guys who think that they're like 70-year-old men, but it's the NBA MVP who's playing against these guys. And he starts out, so then they'll cross over, and they made a whole movie out of it. And Reggie Miller's in it. Like, they picked the right personalities to make me actually want to go see this movie.
And that comes out
next week.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm looking at Thursday, June 28th. You can see it right here in Muscatine.
Yeah, you got Uncle Drew and Sicario coming out next week. Got Ant-Man coming out the week after that. Skyscraper the week after that. Mamma Mia the week after that, I believe.
You could have stopped the Skyscraper.
And Mission Impossible,
Mission Impossible, yeah, that's the week after that.
You will never find a greater arts advocate than yours truly. I may pick it, Mamma Mia, because it's going to be terrible. Like, it's just, I have no expectations of that being good.
I'm expecting that one to literally be like
awful
word for word like remake of the original.
They just bring Cher out of retirement.
It's just going to be like, it's going to be exactly the same as the first one, except for they're going to reference the old characters.
Is Colin Firth going to sing awful in the second one too?
I've
wasted too much oxygen on Mamma Mia too.
It's going to be interesting to see how that does.
I'm excited for it. I'll be honest, I'm excited for Mamma Mia too.
My wife will probably drag me.
There's so many other musicals that could have been remade
or made to begin.
No, it's not a musical, but my Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, we enjoyed, and I didn't think I would, and I saw it in theaters, and then I had a chance to talk to John Corbett, and he was so nice. So that's one of those, like, you put your foot in your mouth, because the whole time going into it, I was probably griping, and then I enjoyed the movie.
But you didn't have the ABBA soundtrack going through the whole back.
I'm not
going
to do it.
Take a chance. No, it's awful.
I definitely, Sicario, Ant-Man for sure, 100%.
Ant-Man's my movie I've been looking forward to all summer long.
I think Mission Impossible is going to be great. The last one was so good. And regardless of what your thoughts are on Tom Cruise, the guy's crazy, does his own stunts still. And these movies, I can't believe, we talk about, you know, franchises and film series, I can't believe they're still making Mission Impossible movies, because that first one came out in 95.
Yeah, but let's talk about, that's a great, we'll talk about this more when we see it, but that's a great example of good source material, because that TV show is from the 60s.
Sure.
So we're going on 50 years of the Mission Impossible phenomenon, and it's because the source material just makes sense. It's easy to make an entertaining TV show or film based off of that premise.
So we got Mission Impossible, Mission Impossible 2, Mission Impossible 3, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. The last one in 2015 was Rogue Nation. It's odd that in 2015 we had Jurassic World and we had Rogue Nation, the Mission Impossible.
Is it odd?
In 2018 we have Fallen Kingdom, Jurassic World, and Mission Impossible Fallout. Those are just those that I don't know. I was surprised. I don't think I wanted to see Rogue Nation. But I went willingly with friends to here at the Palms Tent, and I was floored by it. So now I'm fired up about Fallout. I think it's
adding Jeremy Renner into the mix is a really smart move. He's the good next generation fit in that. Also,
and
quick,
Henry Cavill is in Fallout, which is super exciting. Superman is gonna
and.
There's some good action sequences we've seen in the trailers.
Quick plug for
punching Tom Cruise.
Quick plug for the Palms 10. Obviously, it's the best place in Southeast Iowa to go see a movie. I've seen movies in towns all over this part of the state, and I'm so thankful that it's here in our community in Muscatine. And thanks for sponsoring the One Seat Buffer podcast. And you guys did a good thing, and you had Survivor's Guide to Prison. Steve DeVore, Muscatine native, produced that movie. Was one of the few non-major cities that actually had it in the theater here, and Steve was back for that. That was so cool that he was here for that. But it's on Netflix now, so if you missed it, if you missed that movie here at the Palms 10, you can watch it at home. I watched half of it last night. It's a documentary I'm just, it's really, really well made, really well done. And just really a plug for a Muscatine guy who's doing some great things out in Hollywood and producing some really good movies. And Survivor's Guide to Prison is one of them. Like, I really enjoyed it.
Still to come this summer at the Palms, the awesome $2 summer matinees for families when it's hot and you're looking for something to do.
Oh, yep, every Wednesday and Thursday at 10 o'clock a.m. and 12:30 p.m.
And you can go to the website and see which movies, right?
Yeah. Such a great thing. You can buy your tickets online, and a shameless plug for the car show August 12th in the parking lot that helps out Headbangers for Hayden.
Yep.
That's going to be great.
Yeah. No.
You did a car show last year, and it was packed.
Yeah, no, it was last year we had a really good turnout. We're a little bit later this year, so hopefully we have good weather, and it's not the hottest day of the year again.
Right. I remember that
so
day.
We've
it
still
was
got
sweltering.
We've still got Captain Underpants and Ferdinand and Paddington 2, along with Peter Rabbit and Sherlock Gnomes, and then Ninjago. Yeah. So that's a great lineup of family movies for those $2 matinees.
$2 to see a movie doesn't happen that often. It's
yeah.
a really nice
and
thing.
There's also a chance to you can enter to win a Dr. Pepper bike while you're here during for those.
A Dr. Nice. Pepper bike.
Yeah.
Yes, you had Dr. Pepper during Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
It was Diet Dr. Pepper.
Same difference.
Oh,
yes.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
It's supposed to taste the same, isn't it?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. We are in the thick of the summer blockbuster fun movies. Don't let anybody stop you from seeing this. As much as I had some critiques of this film, I would still tell you to come out and see it, especially if you've seen all the other Jurassic Park film series movies. We're looking at a young man waiting on concessions right now wearing a Jurassic Park shirt. That's pretty cool. And if anybody's going to listen to that Weird Al album we had, remember that?
Yes.
That was awesome.
Well, this isn't a movie too to wait and see. I'll just rent it. I'll watch it on Netflix when it comes out.
Yeah, experience it.
Yeah, there's
sure.
so many great
I'm
sound.
Glad that I saw
the sound
it
of
the
this
theater.
Movie is
it's
amazing.
Loud. Yeah. XL is loud.
This one, I wouldn't say necessarily that it was loud. The Atmos in this one was absolutely amazing. Like, there was one scene where they were in a bar playing pool, and I was like, I literally like had I looked over my shoulder a couple of times because I honestly thought that there was somebody playing pool behind me.
That's a great observation. The pool cue ball, the cue stick hitting the balls, and just that bar ambiance.
Yeah, like I mean, they nailed the Atmos. I've heard a couple of them in Atmos, and like sometimes the Atmos is not like necessarily done quite right. This one they did an amazing job on it, and I would highly recommend it. If you get a chance to see it in an Atmos theater, see it in an Atmos theater.
PG-13 for a reason. Keep that in mind, and you know, spare the kids if you feel like they're too young. Don't let this be the first movie that they see that could traumatize them. That's what I'm so self-conscious about.
If you do take your kid to it, it's their first movie, I would suggest the very front row.
Yeah.
Worst advice ever.
Exactly.
Trivia question before we go.
Okay.
What animals were used to create the T-Rex sound in the Jurassic Park movie?
I feel like I've heard this before.
There's like seven of them.
Is there it's like a cow in part of it?
It's like a lion, a cow, a walrus.
It is a lion, a cow, Jack Russell Terrier, bulldog, elephant.
Really?
Yep.
Penguin.
That, wow. I was like, there was one bird in there, and I can't remember what it was.
Hippopotamus.
They used all of those to create the
Yeah, they
T-Rex.
Used a combination of all of those animal sounds. Cool. Yeah, those people are awesome. So,
all right, thank you for listening to the One Seat Buffer podcast in the Palms 10 Movie Theater in Muscatine, Iowa. Do yourself a favor. Beat the heat, unless you're in a part of the world where it's not hot. Go see a summer blockbuster and enjoy yourself. And might I recommend, if you are in Muscatine, getting a giant pretzel with cheese, of course. That's the staple for myself. I think we'll be back very soon because we have a lot to cover yet this summer, and I'm already excited for fall and getting a couple more good scary movies. Those are always my cup of tea.
Halloween.
And maybe some more thought-provoking films as well.
That's my speed. I'm a real intellectual.
And those movies are going to be coming soon because they got to get them in for Oscar season, everybody.
Yes, I can't wait for The Shape of Water 2.
Oh, gosh. All right, this is Tony Tone.
Joel Krausler.
And Travis Gadel.
We'll see you next time on the One Seat Buffer podcast.